This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our December 12th, 2017 edition of Invest Talk. And as always, we are here to help you become an above average investor. And no matter what your experience level, we have answers for your questions. And we hope you share some of your experiences with us and those questions, and hopefully give you some ideas of how to fine-tune your process to making smarter decisions. Now, bring your questions to us whenever they pop into your mind. 888-99-CHART is our number to get through and ask your question on this hour. We have about 50 minutes left in the show. Goes by quickly, but we urge everyone to get your call in sooner rather than later. And this is a kind of a special show, and the format for me is going to be consistent throughout. Typically, we have a main talking point, and then we have some other ones we sprinkled in, but I'm going to focus on one topic today, and you probably know what that is, and the hype is everywhere, and we get many questions about this on InvestTalk. We get emails to us directly. We have clients asking us about it. Everybody is talking about Bitcoin. But I'm wondering, even though there's plenty of chatter, how many people really understand what Bitcoin is or what cryptocurrencies are in general? And how does it work? So we're going to explore the Bitcoin phenomenon more in depth today. I'm going to give you a full rundown from the beginnings of it, the ethos of cryptocurrencies, of Bitcoin in general, the pros and cons of Bitcoin and blockchain, which is what Bitcoin is built on top of. That's the technology that it's built on top of. Now, almost everywhere you go, you see something about Bitcoin, right? You tune in the news, anything financially related, it's always on Bloomberg now, CNBC. But the big question is, what do you don't really know what to ask besides, do I buy it, right? I'm sure a lot of people are having FOMO, and this happens whenever there is a large increase in the price of any asset, whether that's kind of off the cuff, you know, a weird one like cryptocurrencies or traditional assets. You have the fear of missing out, FOMO. So I guarantee there's some of you out there that have it. So don't feel bad about that. That's just natural human emotion, and we talk about it all the time on Invest Talk. It's all about emotion that gets people into trouble when it comes to investing. So we always try to focus on the fundamentals, so I'll get into the fundamentals as well, because a lot of people will go, well, how do you value Bitcoin? Okay. So before we talk more about that, how about your topic? Maybe that's not really what's on your mind. I'm sure going to get a lot of questions about it. Probably some Bitcoin supporters out there, and I welcome your calls as well. If you love it, give me a call. I'd love to hear you, you know, give your two cents. I'm sure I'm going to give some pros and some cons throughout the hour, but I'd love to hear your take on it, and I'd love to have a discussion with you guys. So ultimately, you drive our conversation with your questions this hour. So I'll try to answer them live during this 4 to 5 Pacific time hour, or you can always leave your question on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hey guys, John in Austin, Texas. My question is about the launch of Bitcoin futures on Sunday. There's a lot of buzz in the media about it. Sounds interesting, but it also sounds kind of risky. Just wanted to get your take on it and see what you guys think. Thank you.
Well, what Bitcoin futures are going to do is going to introduce shorting, taking the other side of the market on Bitcoin, because futures are an obligation to buy and deliver whatever underlying asset that future is trading, right? Whether that's gold or oil or wheat, whatever it is, that's a contract. And so suddenly you're going to have people that are now obligated to deliver Bitcoin or Bitcoin, right, at a certain future time, and so they need to be able to buy it today, sell it later. So it's going to basically create being able to take the other side of the trade, which we really haven't been able to do so far. And that's really what it's going to introduce, at least in my mind. I'm sure it's going to be there are other aspects that are going to affect the market, but definitely something to watch and an important step for the legitimacy of Bitcoin, but also being able to find the fundamental value of what Bitcoin is supposed to be, which is a currency. Now, how many funds do you have in your 401k? Now, data from Vanguard published in Motley Fool shows that the average person only holds a few funds. Mutual funds and ETFs are responsible for the vast majority of assets held in a 401k account. But savers tend to use only a handful of those funds. And data shows that on average, participants were offered about 18 different fund options in their 401k, which is still very, very limited if you think about it. But the average account invests in just two or three of them. Now, part of that is targeted funds, which, you know, there's some diversity there, but it's not an end-all, be-all solution either. Now, of course, holding fewer funds is simply more practical. Index funds enable investors to diversify with just one or two choices. At least that's the concept, okay? So there's different types of funds. Some are broader than others, right? The Vanguard Total Stock Market Index is pretty broad, where you have maybe the Dow is not very broad. It's only 30 stocks, right? So not all index funds are created equal. So how do you make better decisions? Well, first is making the right asset allocation decisions. Understanding what your risk tolerance is, which funds in your plan are good, right? Because you can have a large cap fund in your plan that's not good, and your spouse may have a large cap fund in his or her plan that is great. So understanding the strength of the funds that are within your plan, that's the start. And that's another good reason why we offer active 401k for our KPP clients and our listeners. It's a program that helps you make those choices and then make adjustments over time, at least quarterly. So if you'd like to find out more about that, go there on investtalk.com. Now let's look at our list of topics today. Should you be riding the Bitcoin wave and how cryptocurrencies work? Typically, I have other topics, but I'm going to keep this one because this is a long topic. This is something that you really need to grasp fully because there is some legitimacy to this hysteria. But there's also a lot of hullabaloo as well. So I'm going to cover all of it from top to bottom, and I think it's going to be a very interesting hour to figure out not only what gaps in knowledge you might have in relation to cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, but mine as well. I can't say I'm an expert, but I would say that I'm well-versed in the basics of it. I don't know the exact intricacies of how blockchain works, but I know in general how it works. There are deeper and deeper, more technical aspects that I probably should know, want to know, maybe you'll eventually know. But what I think is most important is understanding the broad concept of where this came from. What are the risks? What are the fundamentals? Because ultimately, you know, we talk about it all the time. Fundamentals matter a lot. They matter. They're everything in the long run. And so we're going to get into what the fundamentals are and whether it's trading on fundamentals. I'll give you a hint, it's not. And that probably doesn't shock you. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. I welcome your money questions. You want to talk about managing your 401k? You know, one of the mistakes employees make is buying too much of their own company stock, being over-levered to one particular entity, which is the company you work for. Not only your paycheck, but also your retirement assets. And many people are over-leveraged to both. You know, if your employer hits a rough patch, you don't want to be losing your nest egg along with your job as well. So that's why you want that diversification. Now, you can reach me right now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues on a service of KPP Financial, innovative investment programs, and a partner relationship with its clients. KPP Financial, independent thinking, shared success. Our 24-hour listener line is for you, 888-99-CHART. Bring your questions.
Hey, good afternoon, Steve. My name is Andy. I live in San Diego. Hey, I'm calling about Pacific Gas and Electric, PCG, I believe is the ticker. I know you guys were pretty interested in it a while back. It's dropped down to, I think it's about $53 a share. I was wondering if you're still pretty interested in it and if you'd think about picking some up right now for the long term, talking 3 to 10 years, anywhere in between there. Let me know what you think. Look forward to hearing your answer. Thanks.
Yeah, he's looking at Pacific Gas and Electric. PCG is the symbol. And we actually picked this up for clients somewhere around this area after that big drop on the Northern California fires. And there's some worry that they will be liable for some deaths, some property destruction because of California laws. There's still not a lot of clarity to the situation. But ultimately, our assessment was they have about $800 million in insurance. And the stock dropped somewhere in the neighborhood of $7 or $8 billion in value, in market cap value, because of this problem. And they have, and while you know their liability may be more than $800 million in insurance coverage that they have, we don't think it's going to raise the level of another $6, $7, $8 billion, right? That they're going to be liable for, maybe a couple billion at the most. And so we think it's actually a good opportunity to pick up PG&E. Yields about 4%, modest amount of debt. It's not a grower, right? It's a utility company engaged in the generation and distribution of electricity and natural gas in Northern and Central California. So certainly in an area that is doing well economically. So there's not a lot of issues there. More and more companies are moving there. There's a lot of server farms. They would need more gas, right? A lot of buildings, which is more electric and natural gas installations. So I don't think it's a bad company to be in long term. They tend to have fairly good profitability, especially for a utility company. And at these levels, that looks pretty attractive. So we picked it up for clients in a couple of our strategies. And so we like PG&E. It's one of our favorite opportunity. Now, Edison International is another one that's dropped. We're not quite at the level yet to where we say we love Edison International there yet, but we do like PG&E at these levels with the fundamental strength. You know, you have a dividend yield of 4%, but a payout ratio of only 45%. So they can raise their dividend. Operating earnings yield is 13%, which is very, very strong. And it's a utility company. So we think that they will maintain their business, not grow very much, but after this big drop, definitely has some nice value to it. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein. Many households reduced their equity investments from 2007 to 2016. And those headed by people 75 and older loaded up. It's kind of odd. Seems like the young got left behind. Where do you fit in the picture? Let's talk about it. Check in now at 888-99-CHART. Let's go to Andre in Palo Alto. How you doing, Andre?
Hey, great. Great show. Thanks for all the hard work you guys put into producing it. We really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for calling.
Question. You spoke
briefly about blockchain and cryptocurrency-related issues using fundamental analysis.
Yeah.
I've been in IT for decades, and this, to me, feels a lot like 1993 with the Internet, except much bigger. I mean, I've deep dove into it. I still don't understand it completely, as you said, you don't. But I think the applications, the potential out there is game-changing
in
so many industries. So my question is, what do you think about the technical side as far as trading these issues, coins, tokens? I mean, there are blockchain-related stocks out there that we can technically trade, but have you ever given any thought to trading these on a technical level? Because they are, it's kind of like a new frontier out there. Are they overvalued? Maybe. Maybe not. I mean, some are, for sure. Some are going to survive, just like in the 90s. Very few companies survived, but some leaders are still the leaders today. Apple, Amazon, Facebook, et cetera.
Yeah, I agree with you in a lot of ways that this is kind of similar to 93. Actually, I think we're probably closer to, you know, where we were in the tech bubble in 99. And I do think that blockchain has a lot of applications, and that cryptocurrency is something that will likely be around for a long time. And I think we eventually will use it. You're kind of getting to my summation at the end of the show, but there's a lot of issues that I'll get to that still remain up in the air, like the viability of using blockchain as a platform, as a technology, in a larger scale, as actual transactions, as a currency. And so that's part of that fundamental analysis, but it's also as a currency, right? It's supposed to be a currency, even though it's not really used as a currency at the moment very often. Its currency's fundamentals are based on supply and demand for that currency, right? And so what is that supply and demand as an actual currency, not as just a speculative vehicle, FOMO, just trying to ride the wave, right? So to me, that is extremely hard to understand at the current time, but it's definitely divorced from the fundamentals, at least as a currency. Say that.
I guess my question was, I just wanted to get your thoughts, if any, on trading some of these using technical.
Technical analysis? Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an aspect of fundamental or technical analysis that can be used 100%, especially in a market that is completely price-driven, right? This isn't a fundamental-driven market. It's completely price-driven. So what else can you use, really, in the short to medium term, but technical analysis? And technical analysis can be used for things like that, because technical analysis is based on the human psychology in a lot of ways, patterns of behavior, and Bitcoin is no different than any other asset class, which, you know, any other asset class you can use technical analysis with. So, yes, you can use technical analysis, but you obviously have to be very good and understand what, volume, pattern, and time means for technical analysis.
And listen, thank you as always. Appreciate your show.
No problem. Thanks, Andre. Let's go to Fernando in Pittsburgh. How you doing, Fernando?
I'm doing good. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
I'm calling regarding TIVA.
Mm-hmm.
I bought TIVA when it was around $28.
Mm-hmm.
And, I saw it drop to $10 and I believe 80 cents. So far, I mean, with the new CEO is going back. And right now, I think it closed at $16
mm-hmm.
and a few cents.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's still a good company to hold?
Well, depends on your time horizon and depends on your confidence in that new CEO. That's really what it's all about, because that new CEO is going to have to restructure the company. They have a lot of debt that they need to manage, and that's the reason that the stock dropped. The reason the dividend going forward is not 4%, but now 2%. They cut it in half. And so likely I would expect it to be a choppy, volatile name for a while until there's some clarity on what the ultimate business looks like, how much they get for the companies that they're divesting, because they have a lot of different brands and divisions that they're going to get rid of. Ultimately, I think their business is strong enough and the industry is strong enough for them to eventually pay down that debt, but I think it's going to be a long road. So if you're looking for this to get back to even anytime soon, I would say probably not. It's going to be probably at least a few years.
We continue with our podcast. First, a word from KPP Financial. When you make money choices, you try to be objective, of course. Look for the facts. Look at your life situation. Some people choose to work with a registered investment advisor, and one of the most important reasons is to be defensive, keeping risk at a minimum. It's not only a way to share the worry, it becomes a practical matter. A professional advisor has the resources and experience. They study the market. They try to anticipate what might happen. For more than 20 years, KPP Financial has been serving clients all across America. They're accessible, responsive, and maybe most important, the KPP principals invest right along with their clients. They call it parallel investing. And to find out more about that or any of their investment programs, just go to investtalk.com when you're ready and click on the investing tab. And now we continue with the podcast. You're listening to Invest Talk, and we're glad you're here. No hype, just answers and information. Bring your question to a registered investment advisor. Right now, you can talk to Justin. Our direct line is 888-99-CHART.
Let's go to Kay in Tennessee. How you doing, Kay?
Hi, I'm good. My question is about Newell Brands.
Okay.
I bought it a few weeks ago after its sale at a price between $30 and $31. Mm-hmm. It's still at that price today. Uh-huh. My question is, should I sell? I have a feeling the stock will keep falling, but I don't have that much experience. What do you think? Will the stock fall? Should I sell?
Well, we actually bought this for our clients, some of our clients, in I believe just one, maybe two of our strategies. Yields about 3%. This is Newell Brands. They manufacture, this is Rubbermaid. They manufacture household hardware, cookware, office goods, to retailers and wholesale distributors. So the reason that it's down is because revenues fell 7% year over year last quarter. Earnings still were up 10%, but this year total earnings supposed to drop 3%, but go back up 5% next year, trading a little bit above book value, 1.3 times book. They do have a little bit of debt in their balance sheet, but it's certainly modest in relation to their cash flows, which are still very positive in line with their last 10 years or so. Actually, if you look at their operating cash flows, at $921 million in the trailing 12 months, which is much better than what you see through the mid-2000s. So we're still doing very well, positive cash flow. And to us, this is just a one-time dip. Operating earnings yields 9.3, yields 3% with its payout ratio of only 32%, meaning they can likely raise that dividend over time and have. So I think you're getting a good deal here. There's a lot of worry with the retail industry as a whole, and I think this is getting caught up into it, and I don't think you need to worry too much. I mean, if you're could it decline some more? Sure, it absolutely could. You know, it's already dropped from a 52-week high of 55. Now it's at 31. So, you know, that's about a 40-plus percent drop, 43% drop from its all-time high. I think you're near a lot of support. Could it go lower? Sure. But you need to have some – what's your risk tolerance level, okay?
I think I'm high. I'm still young, so okay. I don't mind high risk.
Yeah, I think you're fine here then. I hold it long-term. It's still a very profitable company long-term. Return on equity is 19%. It's very profitable long-term, which tends to stay up in those levels. And you'll do fine. I think that nice 3% yield and likely grow over time will be really nice to compound over time. Thanks for the call, Kay.
So how long do you think?
I would hold it. I would hold it.
How long do you think I should?
I think I would hold it for a long time. Okay. As long as they're maintaining their cash flows, I think you're fine. So stay with it. All right, let's get into.
It's in my Roth, so I don't mind holding.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Let's get into our talking point for today, and because I've been talking about it early on, and trying to, the callers, I love the callers, but I think this is a very important topic because Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, this isn't a flash in the pan, and I don't think it's going to go away forever, right? There will be a crash, but it's not going away. Say that. Let's talk about a little about the history and the ethos of this, okay? History is, this was a white paper was published by somebody named Satoshi Nakamoto during the financial crisis, October 2008, right? The teeth of the financial crisis, talked about a decentralized currency. It was just an idea. This isn't really an anomaly, though. This isn't the first time ever. This was talked about a little bit in different forms in the 90s by different facts, you know, small factions. It's not something that just came out of nowhere completely, but it kind of did. The first Bitcoin started trading in 2009, okay? Now, let's talk about where this came from. The ethos of this whole movement is mistrust in the financial system. And the simple fact that, you know, we had this financial crisis and the idea was that central banks had our back, the financial, all the politicians knew what they were doing to run the economy, and it was clear there was a lot of corruption, people getting bought off, a lot of nefarious characters that were running our financial system, and it created a lot of mistrust in the system and mistrust in government. Now, we've had mistrust in government for a long time, but I think the financial crisis really cemented that mistrust in government, and you're kind of seeing that now with Trump and a lot of the anti-globalization movement, the populist movement throughout the world, okay? Now, central banks, ever since 2009, have been printing money, right? The Fed, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of England. This has been their solution, is to print more money to solve the problems. Well, what's the problem with that? This is at the whims of politicians. And the people don't have any say over who's printing money, how much money is printed, and what they're doing with that money, right? Central banks are buying assets. They're buying bonds, whether that's treasuries or basically government securities, mortgage-backed securities. They're putting money into bonds. Well, who owns bonds? Well, either wealthy individuals or banks. So this is kind of, printing money was kind of a backdoor bailout for banks. Now, the reason they do this is because they need banks to lend, meaning politicians need banks to lend, meaning to get the economy moving, right, to get more jobs and get politicians reelected. And the idea of cryptocurrencies is that this is decentralized, it's not controlled by any government, and ultimately, hopefully, and there are some issues with this, supply will be limited. So you can't just print money on a whim, like politicians and central banks do. That is the ethos of this movement. And they're still printing money with unemployment rates very low, with asset prices near all-time highs. While the Fed's not printing money, the central banks in Europe, ECB, and Japan, Bank of Japan, are printing massive amounts of money. And it's all part of the same financial system and thus creates liquidity. And to me, this is absolutely the height of recklessness and idiocy. And this is where this is coming from. This is where Bitcoin grew from. The irresponsibleness of central banks and governments worldwide. That is where this is coming from. Now let's talk a little bit about history. If you say, oh, we can't go to a system that's based on cryptocurrency, I remind you that throughout history, we have changed currencies. Salt was used as money at one point. That's actually in I think it was in Rome, Greece or Rome. Yeah. Somewhere in Europe. I forget exactly where. That's actually where the word salary comes from. Was the fact that salt was used as currency. And you can say, well, cryptocurrencies are just ones and zeros. And you're right. But dollars are just printed on paper. Right? And this started with the end of the gold standard in 1971, fiat currency. Now, one of the problems I see is central banks, they're not going to say they're worried, but they should be worried. Because this will, if it does actually take off as a currency, which currently it's not, they will lose control. Politicians will lose control. Central banks will lose control. Okay, so that is the ethos of cryptocurrencies. And that is very, very important. Because that's how you understand where this comes from. Now, let's talk about the underlying technology, blockchain. And that's what's very important. That's what's enabled this, right? It's this system of keeping track of transactions. That's really all it is. It's a ledger. It's a public ledger of transactions that happen every day. And why is this good? Why is this a positive? Why is blockchain so good? Well, first off, it enables a database to be directly shared without a central administrator. Which, rather than having a central hub of where information is stored, which can be hacked and manipulated by anybody that gains access to that database, blockchain doesn't have that. There's as its own proof and validity and authorization protocols to enforce constraints on the system and the history of transactions. This is why banks are looking at it, right? Because they have a lot of security issues, right? When all of customer data is stored in one place, how do you make that amount of data more secure? Well, if you have it stored in different areas around the world and they're all checking with each other on a transaction and the ledger, then it's much harder. Then you have to gain access to all the nodes in the particular network in order to compromise the whole system, which is almost impossible if you have enough nodes, right? So also, these third-party organizations and third-party authorization allows for a distributed database that is locked by cryptography and much harder to be tampered with. And, you know, there's some cons to that, which I'll get to later, but that is the main ethos of this, the positive of blockchain. Creates high-quality data. There's no central point of failure, like I said. There's process integrity, meaning anything that happens and goes on in that network is based on the rules of that particular cryptography and blockchain. So there's no need for a third party, right? Right now, when you have a Visa or a MasterCard verifying your transaction, that's a third party. Also, it's very transparent. It's public. All parties can see what has happened. Meaning, it can't be altered and deleted, manipulated. Okay, so that's the ethos of cryptocurrency, blockchain, Bitcoin. But I'm going to get into the negatives after the break, because there are a lot of negatives and there's things that need to be discussed that is a problem in the near to medium term. Okay. Now, do you know the difference between term life and whole life or universal life insurance? Now, when you sign up to be an InvestTalk Insider, you can gain access to an entire library of info sheets, each one prepared by somebody in the KPP staff. It's plain talk about important money issues. It's completely free. Just go there to investtalk.com and check in. Let's go to Lorena in Simi Valley. How are you doing, Lorena?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. I have a question regarding 403Bs.
Okay.
And essentially, I've started a 403B, and I will be making a contribution of about $1,500 a month.
Okay.
In order to max it in the year. But I'm kind of hesitant of the market just because, obviously, it's so high, and so I'm expecting it to drop at any time, right?
Wanted
to know if there was some sort of investment that you would recommend that is, you know, I kind of like to take less risk with about half of that money.
This is exactly what we launched Active 401k, and it works for 403Bs as well and 529s, is it takes your risk tolerance level, understands what type of your investment options are in your 403B, and then gives you quarterly recommendations. So I would look at that. That would be the best option that you're going to find out there to make the right decisions, not just today, but going forward on a quarterly basis. Thanks for the call, Arena. Before the hour is up, I need to get to the negatives of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin, because there are plenty. And I know probably early in the show, if you heard me talking, it was more of a positive towards them. And I am more positive long term, but I am convinced there will be a crash. When will it be? I don't know exactly. But let's talk about the issues. First off, there's the supply problem. And this is one of my biggest issues, is that the idea of cryptocurrency and Bitcoin was that there would be a limited supply, that by 2024-ish, that there will be 21 million Bitcoins in circulation and there will never be a new one created. Okay. Well, there's forks which basically create Bitcoin Cash and different types of other cryptocurrencies that basically increases supply, that I just make it, to me it's just like saying, oh, I have dollars and I'm going to print nickels. Well, they're both can be used for buying things, right? And then there's ICOs, initial coin offerings, so there's tons of supply of those that have different use cases, and 99.9% of them are useless and will probably die and be worthless eventually. Okay, so that's issue number one. Number two is not being used as a currency. The idea of a currency is to be used to buy and sell goods and services. It is not being used anymore than it was a year ago. Not to say that it's never being used to buy goods and services, but it's not having increase in adoption. And that is really how to value a currency is people demand it to buy goods and services. That's why you have currency trading throughout the world, right? Because somebody from America wants to buy Chinese-made goods, and they go and they exchange it for yuan, and they buy it over there, and somehow, you know, maybe they eventually those people go and buy Taiwanese dollars or whatever, right? And they're because they need some products from there, right? And that's what foreign currency is about. It's needing that currency to transact in that particular country, okay? And that's the fundamentals of currency, supply and demand. Talked about the supply issue just now. Well, the demand as currency isn't really there. It's more used as a speculative vehicle. That's really it. Okay. What else? Energy. Large energy consumption. It takes a lot of energy to keep the whole blockchain going. 31 terawatts an hour per year to keep the blockchain going. And that's more than like 130 different countries throughout the world. Venezuela had power problems because somebody was mining Bitcoin. Because of the cryptography, it takes a lot of calculations to mine it. So there's a huge energy problem. And then there's blockchain bloat, which slows down the transactions. There's security issues. If someone accesses your wallet, your Bitcoin wallet, they can steal it. And it's happened many times. That's why a lot of people store their Bitcoin offline in flash drives. I am just touching the surface of the problems, which will eventually be ironed out, but a long time from now, to say that. Time to wrap it up. If you have a question on this topic, send me a note. I'm sure you do. Click on Contact Justin on InvestTalk.com. I'm financial advisor and licensed real estate consultant Justin Klein, Chief Executive Officer of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. Steve Peasley and the whole KPP family, thank you for hooking up with us today. Let's meet again here tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.